everybody, to another episode of Yankees and Gravy. I am your host, Tommy Casabona. Thank you so much for tuning in. Appreciate you listening. This is Yankees and Gravy, coming to you straight from Astoria, Queens, at the base of the Triborough Bridge. All we try to do is talk everything there is to cover regarding our beloved New York Yankee Baseball Club. We analyze the games, we analyze the players, we talk about offbeat irreverent stuff, we talk about historical things, whatever comes to mind. Actually, which brings me to the plugs, I'd love to hear your feedback. I'd love to hear some of the things you'd like to see us cover on Yankees and Gravy. If you could email me at yankeesandgravy@gmail.com, I will get your email on the air. We will go over some of the stuff that we're trying to, cover the hot topics, this and that. Also, Twitter, at Yankees and Gravy at Twitter. Facebook, it's Yankee Gravy. That's it. Yankee first name, Gravy last name, because I'm still on the friend page with that, the fan page. I'm not I don't feel like I'll have enough people on my fan page, which does exist, but it's dormant. So if you find it, you're going to see it, but it's not really anything I use only because I'm trying to get the friend page up as much as possible and then eventually be able to switch over to the fan page. And you guys know the deal with that. The friend page, you have friends. The fan page is all about the likes. So that's where we are right now. Also, iTunes. If you go to – well, I'm on Podomatic.com. You'll see the link on Twitter. You'll see the link on all the other places I just mentioned. And on Podomatic.com is the hosting website I use to record this, which – I'm pumped to see. I don't know how these stats work. I don't know. Tracking and stuff like that is not my best thing. All I know is I started out like in the hundreds on these. I guess they have categories. Professional sports is a category. And in my sport last week, and I did look, there's thousands of podcasts on this thing in that category. And I looked, and I don't know what this means. It's good or bad, but I got to thank you. I made it all the way up to 8. Now, right now, I'm back down to 30 because it's been a few days. But I noticed that when you promote it right and when people kind of give that feedback and people are into it, it shoots up. And then, you know, on my best days, I was trending up. On the good weeks, I'd be up to, 40 or 30 at some point, and I'd be, really pumped about that. And then I kind of – last week was a busy week. I did, 3 episodes, and I really kind of pushed it. So I went all the way up to 8. I am at 30 right now because I had, like I said, I haven't posted. But that was cool to see. And seeing the numbers grow each week is very encouraging. So I appreciate that. Now, talking a lot of beer. So basically what I wanted to say was try to subscribe on iTunes. If you go on iTunes, you could find Yankees and Gravy. The best way to do it is get the phone app. If you go to your App Store, you find the Yankees and you find the App Store, you find the podcast app, and then under the podcast app, you could search for Yankees and Gravy, and you'll find me. Just subscribe, and you'll whenever the new one comes out, you'll automatically get it. Also on Stitcher, I don't even know really what Stitcher was. Someone told me you should be on it. I heard about iHeartRadio, SoundCloud. I'm on, but I haven't been posting them on SoundCloud because they erase your old ones. I don't know. Maybe I got to get back into that, but we'll see. We're trying to make this thing work. We're really, really happy to bring you everything we can regarding the New York Yankee baseball, our beloved Yankees in the Bronx. If you, let's get right into it. Last episode, if you didn't hear it, check it out because we do go over Luis Severino. Everybody's talking about Louis because of he just made his major league debut last night with the Yankees. Long-awaited, much-anticipated, and very, very crucial to what's going to happen down the stretch with our beloved Yankees. So, if you want to know the history of this guy, his professional baseball history, listen to the August 1st podcast, and you'll get all the information on Louis that you'll want. But it is the 6th today, and he pitched last night. He made his major league debut. And that was exciting, very, very highly anticipated. I couldn't wait to see it, especially since we remained, we stood pat for the trade deadline. And I think we wanted to basically know, is this going to be the equivalent of making a major move at the deadline? Let's talk about his debut. Now, his fastball was let's go over the stats. So he pitched 5 innings and, I wouldn't call it dominant. You know what I mean? I think he pitched well. Overall, let's just get it out there. The guy, you know, I would say it's a B plus to an A. So you have to be happy with what he did. But if you're going to microanalyze it, you'll say the fastball was live. He was consistently hitting 96. He touched 98, but he was consistently hitting 96 when he had to dial it up. And I think the average of his fastball ended up being at 95. So, you know, the guy's 21 years old. By the way, that's 21 years old is the youngest starting pitcher, the youngest pitcher to start any games in the major leagues this year. He didn't have full command of the changeup or the slider. He seemed to use the slider a lot more last night, despite the fact that his changeup is supposed to be, if his fastball is 1, the changeup is supposed to be 1A. He's supposed to have a big league changeup. We didn't see so much of it. When we did see it, it looked good. But I guess that's just sometimes what you do. If you're in the bullpen and you don't feel like you have a particular pitch, you got to go with what you got. The fastball, he's going to have a fastball to be successful. He's going to have to be able to locate it as well. I mean, you know, 96 is a flamethrower, especially for a starter. But these hitters nowadays, you just, I mean, the reality is the reality. They're used to seeing 98-mile-an-hour fastballs. And look at Evaldi. I'm not saying, you know, like I always say over and over again, the guy pitches 98 consistently, 99. He even hit 100 his last start. And his stats are still, besides wins and losses, because he's getting a lot of run support, his stats are somewhat pedestrian. So it just speaks to the fact that you need to have, I mean, you need to have a strong ability to locate, unless you're throwing over 100. And he does. He seems to, it looked like he was very, very good at moving in and out with that fastball. I felt the umpire gave him a little bit of an inconsistent read on what the strike zone was. I'm not trying to sit here and say he got completely squeezed, although times I thought at times he was getting squeezed. And then I feel like he'd throw the same pitch and they would call it a strike, almost like getting some makeup calls. While, yes, I do appreciate the makeup calls, and I'm sure Mr. Severino did as well, it doesn't speak to the giving you the ability to establish some consistency. And I think that was definitely played a key part as to why he wasn't able to get that deep into the game. You saw what happened. Everybody was it seemed like everybody was at a 3-2 count. He got a lot of 3-ball counts. I don't know. I'd love to check that stat. I don't have the stat, but he didn't walk anybody, you know, and that's something to say. The guy walked nobody. And all I remember about the game, well, not all, but one of the things I remember is just how many times he got to a 3-ball count, which is crazy. So that just shows he's kind of like giving in. That's what happened with Big Poppy too, when he got the one really bad pitch he threw of the night, and Poppy just laced it into the right field seats. He was down 2-0. So he was getting behind. He was working behind a lot. I think that was maybe some jitters. Also, some of the point was that the umpires were squeezing the zone a little bit, but also, you know, the Red Sox are in last place, and we know that, and they're probably not going anywhere this year, but they got a lineup of professional hitters. You know, you got some guys in there that can bang, and you know, that's a tough task. The guy got dropped into Yankee Stadium, a home game for his debut at 21 years old, pitching against our biggest and baddest long-term rival, and we're in the middle of a pennant chase. Not a chase. We're in a pennant race. We're ahead, so we're not chasing, but we're in the race. So you got to give this guy a lot of credit for what he did. Now, like I said, at no point throughout the night did I feel like, woo, you know, like a Harvey and a DeGrom would give you, where, you know what, this guy is going to dominate for years. He just looked like a very, very solid, poised, and steady pitcher, which is basically what he profiled as if you listen to the scouts. What else do we got? So, yeah, if we didn't have so many, you know, 3-ball counts and so many foul-offs and so many pitches, I think we probably could have got him into the 7th, but that didn't happen. A couple of fun facts here. This one's crazy, but I don't know who comes up with the stats. I guess if you make the stat specific enough, you can find, you know, the first guy to do anything. Basically, this guy, Severino, last night was the first ever in the American League to have 2 hits or less with no walks and at least 7 strikeouts. First ever. First ever to have all those 3 stats in their major league debut. That's pretty impressive. It's pretty specific, and, you know, you look it up and it's like, how the hell did you, who looked this shit up? But it's still pretty impressive. Shit, sorry. The weird thing is, though, one person also did it in the National League. They did it this year. And you know who it was? It was Manny Benuelos. And I don't know if, you know, true Yankee fans will know who he is. He was the other half of the Killer Bees with Betances, which is pretty ironic. I hadn't looked up that like made me, you know, do a double take. I didn't go and look up to see how Manny Benuelos is doing this year besides that. But that's some interesting stuff. You know, we got rid of him. We gave up on him pretty much, you know, maybe or maybe not, rightfully so. So we'll see. He had a lot of poise. That's what people kept saying. John Ryan Murphy caught the game because McCann was on the shelf with a knee issue from the day before. And, you know, you like John Ryan Murphy. He seems like he's got a good head on the shoulder. He's almost like an old school, a new school version of Flaherty. You know, you can kind of see very cerebral catcher, very good defensive catcher, not the biggest banger with the bat, but a guy who you trust out there to command the game. And, you know, who knows, maybe he'll have a yes broadcasting career after he's done playing too. But you like him. You could tell when he hit that home run a few weeks ago that actually won the game. And who are they playing? What was that? Is that the – when A-Rod tied it and then he won it. Who were they playing? Doesn't matter, whatever. But you could say when he hit that home run, rounded the bases, came into the dugout, how the Yankees just exploded and was so happy for him. Says a lot about the guy that they, you know, they appreciate what he does and what he brings to the table. So that's Louis Severino. Welcome to New York, Louis. We're certainly happy to have you. And you did not dispute through a two-hitter with no walks for your major league debut. The only dark cloud is the fact that you lost. Not your fault. Why did we lose? Main reason was a gentleman named Stephen Wright, a knuckleball pitcher with the Boston Red Sox, who absolutely put the clamps on us. He had us, I mean, that knuckleball was dipping, diving, you know, all over the place. We didn't have an answer for it. The only one who did have an answer for it was Mr. Beltran, and he blasted one. And, you know, Tex after the game said, you know, we just never caught up to him. He felt like we were gonna catch him eventually, and they started to, I guess, because they started getting more base runners towards the end of the game, most particularly in the ninth. But they just didn't. They just never got to him. And when, you know, the team came into the game, this is just an amazing stat: 90 runs over the last 10 games. That's stupid. Okay, obviously we know there was a couple of them in there that were very, very top heavy, so it's a little deceptive, but I don't give a shit. 10 games, 90 runs. That is, obviously, you don't have to be a mathematician to figure out what the average per game is on that. Just ridiculous, beastly. So this guy, Stephen Wright's killing us. We can't hit him. You know, it's funny. I think he's still out. This comedian called Stephen Wright. He's the guy who just talks like this, and he has one-liners, and then he stops. None of the next line has nothing to do with the line before that. I wish I could remember some of his jokes. His style of humor is almost like Hedberg, Jim Hedberg. That's his name, yeah. You know, where he just kind of just spews out one-liners and then just like almost like thought-provoking stuff, wordplay, stuff like that. And he always used to wear a Boston Red Sox hat. It's kind of ironic. But, you know, you got to tip your cap sometimes. The guy pitched a great game. We were hot as freaking, you know, fire coming in. But that's what's going to happen. When you average 10 runs a game for 9 games in a row. No, 9 games, 9 runs for 10 games in a row. You're going to inevitably get cold. And that seems to be what happened. One thing that people aren't talking about with Luis Severino's debut, which he did a great job, Aaron Warren came in and pitched 3 scoreless. This is a guy who, I don't know, we'll talk more about the rotation later because it's just a topic that I don't see going away ever. I'm never going to be like looking at this rotation and be like, ah, you know what? We can exhale. We're good. It's just too much going on and too many holes. When a guy comes in and gives you a performance like that, the guy's a team guy. The guy has just been a consummate pro, doing whatever is asked of him. I don't know. I don't want to play with him, and I did speak on a previous podcast about, you know what, now he's in the bullpen. That's what you got, and that's where you got to leave him. I don't know, man. Things have happened since then that make me wonder if we should change our mind about that. But please, Adam Warren, should he be stretched out again? And should he start again? Email me, yankeesandgravy@gmail.com. I want to know what you guys think, because I'll get into some of the reasons why I'm not thinking that that's the worst idea anymore. Our buddy, Mr. Headley, is this, guys, this can't go on. You guys know that, right? I mean, I'm not, you know, the type of guy who's going to nitpick, and I'm not the type of guy that, okay, you make a mistake, and you know what, we got to get you out of here, and, you know, you're just not to be relied on. I do think we pulled the plug on Nunez a little too early because he's feeling like shit. But where we are right now with this team and where we want to go, this stuff cannot happen. If you watch Mark Teixeira at first base, like we talked about, and I felt like we were kind of coming out of this too. It just sucks. Mark Teixeira is basically like a freaking NHL goalie at first base. He's standing on top of his head. Could you imagine being Mark Teixeira, ground ball to freaking shortstop, second base, third base? You have no idea where the ball is going to go. You have to be absolutely ready for anything. If I could just picture the crack of the bat, ground ball, Teixeira, first. Oh, shit. Got to get to first base. Got to set myself up. And I have to be ready to move in any direction at the drop of a hat, because he's getting him in the dirt. He's getting him over his head. He's having to come off the bag. He's having to do this, having to do that. And what sucks is that, you know, he doesn't get too much credit. Now, when one gets by him, yeah, he's going to get the blame. And they get by him. Every once in a while, they're going to get by him, and it just looks bad for him. But what the reality is that he's saving so many of those in the dirt, around him, on top of him, over, behind him. He's saving so many errant throws to first base that we don't even realize. We're very lucky to have him. He's also, you know, just still playing that brilliant first base, and you got to love Teixeira. You got to obviously love what he's doing at the bat, but don't discount what he's doing at first base too, because it's incredible, and we wouldn't be where we are without it. Now, getting back to Headley, this is his 18th freaking error. Now, he's obviously coming back a little bit with the bat. Now, I don't want to read too much into it either way. If the guy can hit, the guy can hit. We're going to hope he can hit. We can't, you know, because he goes on a little hot streak, think that, you know what, this guy's locked in now. We got freaking, you know, the second coming of, who's a good third baseman? Alex Rodriguez, 2007, you know, up at the plate. But whatever, you're going to support him. You got to have his back. But I don't know. That has to be, you know, I guess it is what it is. If the guy screws up at third base, he's going to screw up at third base. We're going to live and die by it. It's probably why they're not bringing up Ref Snyder too, because you can't have, you know, two guys. And Didi's, you know, while he's been better, he's most of the year has not been lights out at short. But he's been better lately. It's a non-wood knock again, like last time. I'm just hoping that we figure this out. And I'm hoping, you know, the right mix of Headley figuring it out / the ball not coming to him in important situations just kind of gets us to where we need to be. And, you know, basically, hopefully, the flaws and the deficiencies in the defense are hidden, basically. But I really, really hope he gets it together. 18 errors is obscene, especially for a guy who played the level of third base that he played last year. It's a scary thing because it's definitely mental. You know what I mean? It's got to be. My body doesn't need 7 slices of freaking pizza, but my mind tells it does, so I eat it. His body is perfectly. He's a finely tuned athlete. He's proven to be able to play third base at an overly high level. But his mind right now, for whatever reason, is telling him that there's a block. And I'm really hoping he gets that all sorted out. What What do you think is going to happen? Listen, I'm not stupid enough to start talking World Series as a Yankee fan. I know the jinx factor. I know the ignorance of that. But, you know, if whether it's World Series, whether it's playoffs, whether it's interleague, not playoffs, whether it's a World Series or interleague, what do you think about Alex Rodriguez having to sit? This guy's playing a shithole third base, and you have not, I wouldn't say MVP caliber numbers, but definitely at this point all-star level, all-star caliber numbers at your DH, who is a former third baseman. You got to start thinking about what you're going to do as far as making sure A-Rod does not have to sit in National League parks. Now, it's good the American League won the All-Star game, so again, I'm talking World Series. But in the event, I'm just saying, you got to prepare. You know, you're not in this thing to lose, you know, and that is a legitimate thing that's going to happen once you, if you do get there, once you get there, what are you going to do? I don't want to sit A-Rod, and I think A-Rod is pretty sure-handed at third base. He's got a gun, and I think you have to flirt with the idea of sitting Headley when it comes time to play in those National League parks. And I would audition it a little bit in the Mets series. I would just get him out there so it's not crazy. If we do make it, it's not the craziest thing in the world to see him out there, and all the, at least some of the cobwebs are dusted off. That's going to fuck with Headley's head, but so be it. He's already freaking screwed up. He's got 18 errors, so what are we losing there? Last night, 2-1 game. I didn't agree last night with putting McCann in that spot. The guy was cold. He's off the bench. He's probably thinking, you know what, there's no way I'm playing this game. He's got a bum knee from the day before. We still don't know how serious that is, if it is serious at all. It may not be, but still. You got Didi Gregorius. If he's doing anything, he's hitting. If he was hitting at all this year, he's hitting lately. And he's kind of hot. Now, I could see if we were down 2-0 and there was a guy on and we needed the banger to freaking tie it up. We didn't, though. We needed one run. We got a guy at second. We got first. We need one run and a base hit. Chances are gives him a good chance of scoring. I would have had Didi hit and hope for that base hit and tie the game up and then see what happens from there. I'll take my chances. We're at home. We got the, you know, the all-star bullpen. I would have went that route. Girardi didn't. Again, reason why? You know, this guy's got a pretty good history. McCann's got a pretty good history against this guy, whoever the hell was pitching. With that freaking binder, again, Joe, I love the fact that you're very educated and well-informed about, you know, scouting reports and sabermetrics and stats and this and that. But there's a heartbeat to the game, as the great Joe Torre once said, and you can't ignore that. There is a heartbeat to this game. Let Didi hit in that spot. Let him get the base hit. Let him tie it up. And within the next couple of innings, we would have got to them and won that game. And while Luis Severino would not have gotten the win, it would have been a silver lining, an extra silver lining to his impressive Major League debut. Big, big, big news, huge news coming out of the Bronx came out yesterday. Ackley goes to the DL. What are we going to do? What are we going to do without Ackley, guys? Are we, should we shut it down? Should we start cutting people and free up some cap space? What should we do? Should we mail it in? Obviously, just kidding. Ackley to the DL means nothing to me. Garrett Jones is back in the mix. Not a huge move either way, but if you're going to ask me one of the two, I prefer to have Garrett Jones in the mix simply because if all else is equal, I go with loyalty, and he's been a good, loyal Yankee all year long. You know, Garrett Jones, like I said, you got to give him a lot of credit. Nobody thought A-Rod was going to have the year he was going to have. Nobody thought we'd stay as healthy as we have. So if you're a one Garrett Jones, you probably came into this season thinking you were going to get a lot more at-bats than you have. And he has not gotten a lot of at-bats. And, you know, You know, he's a professional. You like to think that, you know what, these guys should shut the hell up and play and do what's asked of them. Doesn't always work like that. Guys can make noise. Guys can ask for trades. Guys can be irritable in the clubhouse, not fun to be around. This guy seems to have been a good soldier. So that's what it is. Cashman is going out on a limb to make sure that everybody knows the Mariners did nothing wrong in this trade. So Ackley was... people think, you know, a little weird. He shows up and his first, he's got three at-bats, and after his third at-bat, he gets a freaking, you know, he gets hurt. Cashman is making sure that he knows, everybody knows that, you know, no foul play. He was perfectly healthy when he got to the Yankees and hurt himself on the field as a New York Yankee. So, you know, all thoughts of Seattle selling us a bad product or giving us a bad product has been thrown out the window. This is the second time he had to do that. He did it a couple years ago when the same rumors circulated about our buddy Michael Pineda. So they were saying Pineda, you know, gets hurt as soon as he joins the Yankees. Now, I mean, or maybe even just the simple fact that they overworked him that first year. What was it, 2011, when he pitched a ton of innings and he was a rookie. He just got a tired arm. He had that one half of the year where he just blew everybody away and was an all-star. And his second half of the year, he couldn't get anybody out. And, you know, he was still young, and we still were looking at the potential that he might have, and we were very excited about that, despite the fact that he didn't have a good second half of the year. But then, you know, come 2012, we didn't see much of him at all. So it is what it is. Pineda, Cashman is, doing the right thing, and that's, I guess, admirable of him, right or wrong. Pineda, while we're on the topic, is not going to pitch in the month of August. That's, listen, what did he go down? He went down about a week ago, so they put him on the 15-day DL. And the original thought was, so that's, you know, 1st of August, so maybe, you know, they said originally 15-day DL, that's probably not realistic, so we'll probably have him back the beginning of September. So it's not a surprise that he's not going to pitch in August. But then Cashman's next statement was he's hoping he can return sometime in September. So you look at tone, the way they speak, the way he kind of let it out there. He basically said, you know, if you're optimistic that maybe he could pitch early September, you say, you know what, 15-day DL, then he'll pick up a baseball. We'll see where we're at, hoping to get him back early September. You know, that would be, okay, you know what, then you're being optimistic. If you read between the lines, he just says, Pineda's definitely not pitching in August, and we're hoping he can return sometime in September. That basically tells you that, you know, exactly what it says, and realistically, I don't even know what that means, because what do you mean by September? It's a freaking long month. So can he be back the first week of September? If so, he can get three or four, you know, starts before we head into the playoffs. If he comes back by September, the end of September, what are we going to do? Are we gonna have him come back and then not understand what we have in him as far as being able to trust him? And then just maybe one tune-up start and plug him. Say he's able to pitch, you know, September 21st. And, you know, he has a terrible outing. And playoffs are going to start. Do we put him in? So this is a dilemma, guys. We don't know what we have in Michael Pineda now. And that's a problem. So we got to figure out what we're going to do with this rotation. And the chips are, I don't know. As we sit right now, August 6th, we're only four and a half. And I don't like to be an alarmist, but we have a huge series with Toronto coming up. Now, this could be good or bad, because we can, you know, make a statement to them and shut them back down and tell them, you know what, you're not quite ready. Or they can win the series and cut that lead down significantly, which is going to put us in a position to have to hustle. And while we're looking like an elite team in baseball right now, if you have your little crystal ball and look into the future, you have to be concerned about this starting rotation. Look at what we're talking about. Tanaka, he's our ace. He's our guy. He's the guy that's the rock for us right now. Now, You don't know what I keep saying it. You don't know that he's going to freaking hold on. That in turn makes our second best option right now Ivaldi. Ivaldi is not known to get out of the fifth inning. You know what I mean? Or fifth or sixth inning. He's not known to get out of the sixth inning. So if Tanaka goes down, which is a distinct possibility, and I know I'm painting a doomsday picture, but I think you're irresponsible if you don't look at the worst case scenario because you want to be able to feel good and you don't want to give yourself a false sense of confidence as we head into the dog days of August. So Tanaka, pitching very well, or at least his last start. He's been inconsistent, but again, you got to be able to say at the end of the day, the guy can throw, and you got to be able to trust him. And if healthy, I do trust Tanaka. But he's got that freaking, you know, he's got that, you know, the threat of needing Tommy John surgery around the corner. And hopefully it doesn't happen, but I guess we'll see. Ivaldi is our number two guy right now, as far as, at least as far as I'm concerned. And he would eat a lot of innings, but he just tends to get beat up towards the end of his starts, which is late fifth, you know, early sixth inning. CeCe, you know what you got with CeCe. He's terrible. Nova's the guy I would love to see step up and pitch like, you know, number two or number three, like we once thought he could. He does show signs. He's been pretty consistent. You know, Nova doesn't take beatings too much. So, you know, he's possibly you know, a bright spot. And then you got Severino, who, yeah, he pitched great yesterday. Hopefully he can keep that up. But you know they're going to be careful with him. You know they're not going to be like, you know what, Severino, get out there, give us a complete game. You know, so that's all I'm saying. You got a guy with an innings limit in Severino. You got a guy who knows what and how long you're going to get with him for your ace, Tanaka. You got Ivaldi, who gets banged around a lot, which gets a lot of run support, but has been pitching better lately. CeCe's terrible. Nova, hopefully. So, again, it's almost like the Yankee team at the beginning of the year. I said it on this podcast. I was like, you know what? They could win 90 games. They could freaking win 75 games. There's such, a wide margin for success with this group. If everybody stays healthy, we could freaking be one of the best pitching staff in the American League, it looks like. If we have one or two more injuries, and forget it, we won't win the division. We'll blow the division lead, and we'll get eliminated the first round if we make the wild card. So, I don't know. I don't know what the answers are. That's why I brought up Adam Warren before, because you know what? The guy has proven to be able to hold a place in the starting rotation and do us proud. He has done a good job. So I'm saying, like, as a consistent guy, maybe you want to consider stretching him out. Maybe even send him down to AAA and let him start. And you know what? The guy just seems to be, you know, a soldier. And if we tell him why we're doing it and we can sell him on it, let him stretch out in Scranton. And inevitably, if we need a starter for a stretch run, we go get him. Same thing with Brian Mitchell. That's what they did with him. They sent him down because they wanted him to be able to start if they needed a starter. So it's either one of those two guys. I like Adam Warren better because he's kind of been a little bit more proven on a regular basis. I do like Brian Mitchell, but I think that's more for down the road. I think Adam Warren's ready now, and we may want to, you know, go that route, and we may want to make that move. Is it a little desperate? Yeah, but again, I don't know how I feel about the solidarity of this staff. It's scary. Nova, too. You don't even know if Nova's going to hold up. He had to get taken out of the game last week. The last start he did well, but the start before that he had to get taken out because he got tired, you know? He's coming off Tommy John. So if that's going to be a constant theme, these are the things you have to do and you have to be ready for. What happens if Tanaka blows out his elbow on his next start? Right? What do you got? You got nothing. You got Ivaldi, who's your ace now. CeCe, who's terrible. Nova, who might get tired, you know, in the fifth inning. And Severino, who you, no matter what, are not going to be reckless with his arm. So you got to start thinking about this stuff. I don't mean to be an alarmist and a doomsday guy, but you got to start thinking about this stuff. How about Big Papi running his freaking mouth about A-Rod? Now, you know, I don't know if he was being coy or whatever, but he said the right thing. But I think everybody across the board knows that he was being sarcastic and just trying to plant the little seed of doubt in your head. You know, you got to give Alex credit. He's doing it right, and he's having a great year, and he's playing the game the right way. And it gives like a little grin, and you know, if you believe that's true, or if you know something like that, to the effect of he threw a little disclaimer out, like you know you. I guess we have to assume that he's playing the game the right way right now, sort of hinting at some sort of way that maybe he's still on the juice. As good a point or as valid as that might be, I don't want to hear it from Big Papi. You failed a drug test in 2003 and basically bullied everybody into saying, don't bother me with that stuff. He basically denied it, said no, leave me alone, and everybody freaking left him alone for some reason. But he failed the drug test. Listen, they all freaking did it. I don't know what to tell you at this point. They all did it, and, you know, it's just a dilemma for baseball. I get it. I think you're just going to have to look at that era, and you're just going to have to mentally, whenever you look at numbers and you want to analyze the best players in the game and the best pitchers in the game and the best teams in the game and just numbers in general, you know, you're just looking at it. 35 home runs at the end of the year now is like 50 home runs during the steroid era. And that's just what it's going to be. But either way, the original point, Big Papi, you should shut the hell up. Because you did take steroids and you have no remorse, no apology, no admission, and no acknowledgement of the fact that you failed that drug test. And I don't think from living in a glass house, I don't think you should be casting any stones. And your team's in last place, so shut up. Good hit last night, though. That's pretty much it for the week on the podcast. I did just come across some stats, and I'm not, like I said, I'm not the guy who's, you know, top to bottom giving you analysis of everybody who's in A-ball and everybody from the draft, and I'm not that. I just thought it was interesting. I was just looking at, you know, these four guys who were untouchable. Now it's three because one of them's in the major leagues. I consider, you know, once you're up, you're up. So you're here. The other guys that they talk about, I just started watching them. And, you know, yesterday I saw just looking at what these guys have done. There's quote-unquote baby bombers, the guys who we're looking at in the future to be big parts of this organization. And the news was mostly good if you're going by last night. Greg Bird went 3-for-5 with a triple and 2 home runs, 4 RBIs. That's a pretty big day, ladies and gentlemen. 3-for-5, triple, 2 home runs, and 4 RBIs. So that's Greg Bird, and he is slated to be a first baseman for us in the future. Probably the guy who's going to fill in for Mark Teixeira. He'll probably, you know, as soon as Mark is done, we'll probably have a guy in Greg Bird who will slide right in there. He's not necessarily the most highly touted of our prospects, but he looks pretty good and definitely looked good last night. Rob Refsnyder. Now, this guy already played on the Yankees, and I think, quite frankly, he probably should be here right now. We need this guy's bat. Actually, you know what? Let me go back on that. The beauty of it is we don't need his bat. He's a definite banger. He's got the stick. They're just worried about him in the field, and I guess that kind of makes sense. You can't have a shitty third baseman and a shitty second baseman. So, you know, the fact that Chase Headley is so unreliable at third base might have to do with some of the reason why Rob Refsnyder is still in the minor leagues. But he went 3-for-4 last night with 2 friggin' doubles. So he's banging. Shortstop Jorge Mateo, who is in high A ball. These other two guys are in AAA. So the next move up for them is the major leagues. Jorge Mateo has some ways to go. He's in high A. He has to still go through double A and then get to triple A. But he went 4-for-6 with a triple and a stolen base. The bad news, our big gun, the guy who now, with Severino here, is our number one prospect, right fielder by the name of Aaron Judge. Beast of a man. They say he's like an Adonis. He's like a freaking, he could play any, they say he looks like he could play any position in the National Football League. He's just a monster. Obviously, that's an exaggeration, whether he can or not, but they're just saying he looks his, the body type, just that of a, you know, what is he, 6'7", 250, just a monster, a giant man, and a good hitter. Unfortunately, not yesterday. 0 for 4 with 4 strikeouts. So, again, I'm going to keep looking at these guys, seeing how they're doing and seeing how they're progressing. But not a good day for Mr. Judge. Please, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening. But follow me on Twitter, at Yankees and Gravy, on Twitter. Facebook, it's just Yankee Gravy. Subscribe to me on iTunes. Email me comments, reactions. Again, I want back and forth. I don't care if it's bad. I don't care if you think I said some stupid shit and you want to call me out on it. That's what I'm looking for, that type of stuff. Yankeesandgravy@gmail.com. Hope you enjoyed it. Thanks again for listening.